Welcome to the Great Bays Tennis Podcast. I'm Steve Smith with Brandon Flanagan. We're coming to you from the FM Tennis Performance Center in Boynton Beach, Florida. Brandon, podcast number 67. Why don't you tell the listeners what we're going to talk about?
We're going to talk about the amazing sports and tennis movie, King Richard, with Will Smith, and some incredible storytelling, incredible acting. Of course, the plot, we probably have a pretty good idea, but the way they executed it, really, really special movie, in my opinion.
I think you made a really important point for our listeners, spoiler alert. So if you want to listen to our podcast after you watch the movie, you need to know that up front. Perhaps somebody would like to listen to the podcast first and see the movie second. I went back to back. I went two nights in a row. A friend of mine had set up where I could watch it on a computer the next day, but I said, no, I want to see it on the big silver screen. And I do think for everyone, I definitely speak for myself, is that when you see a movie a second time, especially if you could do it back to back, you can pick up some things you didn't the first time. But let's get started. It's not a documentary. Definitely some liberties were taken to dramatize the story. Once again, like you, I thought the movie was excellent. But like anything, there's the three things that I didn't care for. We'll get into number one in more detail, how Vic Braden was portrayed and how the storyline was really totally fabricated. That was not true. I have a connection to that because the people who produced the movie called me up and I shared a video clip that was part of the movie. Jennifer Capriati, I don't even want to mention it because 18 years old, I really think they threw her under the bus. Granted, the top professionals, they grow up under a microscope. 18 years old, 20 grams of marijuana. And, you know, that's the way YouTube works now, is that she had such an amazing career. She came back. Let's cover the movie where Rick said, hey, she came back and won Grand Slams. But just when you see that, how that was portrayed, I mean, I just... Richard, in one of the interviews, is like, leave it alone. I think that with Jennifer Capriati, people should leave it alone. You know, a lot of teenagers make mistakes. I know you and I didn't make any mistakes as teenagers.
Zero mistakes.
I knew you as a teenager. You were perfect.
I was perfect, right?
Also, too, that the Arantes Vicario, the bathroom break, the movie basically ended when Venus... It was at the tournament in Oakland. It was actually an indoor tournament. The movie, it was a nuance that was wrong, that it was an outdoor tournament. But I'm sure you could look up and see that there was a nine-minute bathroom break. I'm sure with Jennifer, you know, 1994, and they showed her photo from the police station, the mug. But we can come back to that.
I also thought that Sanchez Vicario was not, they really built her up as number one. She's the best player in the world. She's number one in the world. And she was the number one seed at that tournament, I'm sure. But I think she was number two in the world.
Well, you're right. But I do think that if you looked it up, perhaps at that time in the year, there's a difference between being ranked one in April
right.
and being ranked one at the end of the year. With three coaches, Paul Cohen, Vic Braden, Rick Macy. Let's just touch upon Paul Cohen. I'm going to guess that he's in his late 70s. If you want to get online, Paul Cohen Tennis, you can actually still take a Zoom lesson from him. But he was one of the coaches, and he was a top U.S. junior, captain of the Berkeley tennis team. He made the NCAA tournament. That's not an easy thing to do. Questions that insiders will ask, someone say, play college tennis, and this is for Division I players generally, is, but it works the same in the other divisions. To play in the NCAA tournament, you know, not that the top, it's a 64 draw, but not all top 64 players get in because if you win your conference. But he played the NCAA tournament, played two Grand Slams. By his mid-20s, he had traveled to over 80 countries. Like Alan Fox, top 10 player in the world, top player. He also has a PhD and he's an author. He wrote the book, If I'm the Better Player, Why Don't I Win? But like Alan, Paul Cohen was a consultant to Israeli tennis. Actually, Alan Fox, an American, he played for Israel. But Cohen wrote, he was a contributor to World Tennis Magazine. I'm sure this is accurate, but his claim to fame is he was the first traveling coach on the ATP Tour. And he did that 7 years before Leonard Berglund. A lot of people think Borg was the first person to have a traveling, full-time traveling coach. So in the movie, you'll see that he did work with the Williams sisters. LA-based coach at that time, McEnroe, Chang, Solomon, worked with a lot of top juniors. McEnroe, Chang, Solomon, the pros. Not to take anything away from him, but he coached players who were already players. And I respect that, but that's not taking players from a beginning level.
In the movie, they had McEnroe and Sampras practicing together as the Williams sisters came up. You thought that probably wasn't the case?
Well, you could do the homework on that as far as their ages and then they practice. Their careers overlapped, and McEnroe had a place out in Malibu, and Sampras is from Southern Cal. But I don't think it happened just that way, where I have a funny story, not based on McEnroe or Sampras being there. Just like when Jennifer Capriati, their careers didn't overlap as far as their time with Macy. So right. when they show up at Macy's finally, Jennifer wasn't there to hit balls with them. But I was working in Southern California. I was out working for Vic Braden. And for the first 6 months, I was a volunteer. Even to the point when they asked me to work, I turned them down. Because what I would do is when Vic would leave town, I would leave town. I was working nights to support myself. I was living out of a van. You know some van stories. So I wanted to meet anybody and everybody who taught tennis, and Paul Cohen is highly regarded. So if you want to find out anything about tennis, you go to the pro shop, and generally the person stringing rackets is the person who's also answering the phone. So they know everything that's going on in the tennis club, the tennis community. So there's a shop right off the UCLA campus. Now this is the late 70s. So in the movie, when they show Richard driving his Volkswagen bus and the two girls are in the back and they're just talking about how beautiful these big mansions are, Cohen was teaching in Bel Air. So this is the lengths I went to study tennis. So from the stringer on the UCLA campus, I go, I need to meet Paul Cohen. And he goes, I deliver rackets to him. He goes, this is where he teaches. Get the address. And then I rock up in my van and I get out of the van and I start to walk around this mansion, the tennis court in the back. The stringer told me. And these two guard dogs chased me away. So anyway, I never got to, I never even listened to Paul Cohen in person.
We got to finish that story though. Were you quick enough to escape the guard dogs?
I was in my 20s and I barely made it. But I'm sure they had one back in the day. They had one of those electrical fences where it's like, whoa, two Doberman pinchers. I mean, you can't make that up. But in the movie, they're at a posh club. With themes from Paul Cohen, play close to the baseline, connect all shots, understand sequences, no stats. That's one great thing about you can just look things up. I mean, I have a very impressive, extensive library. Paul Cohen, today I think he'd be labeled unfairly as old school coaching. There is no old, how's it go? Old school, new school, there is no school. Be planted. You know, they did revolutionize, they made it seem like Richard revolutionized the open stance.
He kept preaching the open stance.
Open stance. And then, like the Williams sisters were the first, they had open stance backhands. But that's, you know, you think about, say, Jimmy Connors, for example. Granny had great footwork, and they emphasized to hit off the front foot. But for the longest time in tennis, players played a one-handed backhand, so the open stance wasn't as prevalent. But the two-handed backhands are left-handed forehand for a righty, so it's like you're hitting two forehands. But more on Cohen, turn, extended the target, long follow-throughs. That's something that people don't really emphasize, especially on the forehand. Keep your head still. Playing close to the baseline means playing the balls on the rise. But he was definitely analytical. He professed. And I just really wanted to know more about Paul Cohen. 11 sub games, so I could only really guess what all 11 are. But one of his lines in the movie, and that was something that if you you read what he wrote, there's 228 shots. And you think about tennis terminology, you can go, all right, it's a forehand conventional approach volley. And so it's like, well, okay, that's quite a few shots. There's a forehand, there's an approach shot, there's a volley, and then you can string them all together. You know, we have a series of shots we just call emergency shots, basic shots, specialty shots, emergency shots. I think today's tennis, you hear too much serve plus one. I cringe every time I hear it. Some kid's playing 12 and unders, and he's tossing the ball way over his head, and he's got a really extreme grip on the forehand side. He's running around backhands from everywhere in the court, and it's just slap one and slap two. In some way, one way or the other, I'm not sure exactly, but obviously highly educated, went to Berkeley, but he was a Wall Street analyst. So cerebral thinker, deep thinker. You know, mindfulness years ago was, you know, figured out. I think today mindfulness is, you know, used quite often with sports psychologists. Are you, you know, a world-class human being? You remember this, Brandon, where Paul Cohen in the movie is telling Richard, no one is going to coach your kids for free. And then he looked at him and he goes, you did. Because, you know, Richard, he did in the movies, he rocks up and McEnroe is upset. He storms off. It had nothing to do with Richard and the girls, but wasn't playing well in practice. Sampras, he's easygoing Pete. Because Pete, be all right if you just rest serve for a minute? Coach Paul sent feed some balls to my kids.
I think as far as the feeding, it did such a great job with the young girls who played Venus and Serena as far as how they looked on camera. They did a great job mimicking the strokes. And Vicario too. You were telling me that's all, they obviously put that ball in afterwards. It's all shadow swinging and they throw a little CGI in there. But as far as Paul Cohen's feeding, you could tell right away that he was not that skilled of a player, the actor.
Same with the person who portrayed Macy, the actor.
Yeah.
With the movie Wimbledon, Pat Cash was the technical director, and the leading actress said, just remember, move your feet, get your racket back. But yeah, I'm not sure what the term is, superimpose the ball, but the girls definitely, and one of them, I'm not sure which, I read, and it was pointed out which one, but one of them is actually a lefty. But I think they did an outstanding job.
Oh yeah,
with how they swing the racket.
Venus, you know, the slightly late forehand where the follow through kind of comes up a little bit too high, the backhand where the take back is so low, kind of pauses, very really early take back, but a low take back on the backhand.
There was a scene where Paul Cohen has Richard and the two girls watching a videotape of Capriati, because she, a few years younger, she breaks on the scene, and she won the national 18s at 12, and I think it was the Orange Bowl at 12. But they show a film of Macy and they show a film of Capriati hitting balls, and the camera goes through the crowd and it zeroes in on Macy. And Cohen says, Rick Macy, he's not as dumb as the rest. So, I mean, I do think there's little nuances like that, because there's so much ego in tennis teaching. With Rick Macy, let's go through a few things. Anything from you though on Paul Cohen, anything from that part of it?
Well, I thought it was interesting how, and we'll get to this more about Richard himself, but how quickly he then kind of, once he felt like he wasn't needed anymore, he just dropped him like a bad habit, just done with him.
Yeah, and didn't talk to the wife, didn't talk to the girls.
Just made the decision, and then Paul, all the work that he had done pro bono with Venus only, now with Serena, but just done. He just was out.
Yeah.
And that's not a name, I'll be honest, that's not a name that I even heard before I saw the movie. So we had to, you know, after the movie we saw it together, I just talked to you about it, and I didn't really know anything about him. So he obviously, you know, is a coach who's had a strong reputation, but as far as his work with Venus, I don't know if he got his end of the bargain out of it.
No, I don't think a penny.
Yeah.
A penny.
It's too bad.
There's this thing called experience though. So he definitely had to learn so much from that. Rick Macy, same age as me, born in 54. He's from Ohio, started academy in 1985. Haines City near Orlando. He was a resort, Greenleaf Resort. My first connection with Rick, he hired a couple of my students when I was running his academic program. So I only knew Rick, like a lot of people at one point. I first just knew them through talking to them on the telephone. And everybody was looking for coaches, especially in the summertime. But Dennis Vandermeer, he had a South African call me. He wanted to buy a tennis club in Vero Beach. And Dennis recommended that I run it. So I fly to Orlando. But I went a day early, checked into Greenleaf. And incognito, some people might think, well, that's just not right. But if you understand how to study tennis, you do want to do things incognito.
Did you have one of those fake mustache with the glasses combo
nose? But, no, it's not like it wasn't like today where people recognize you from Facebook or from a YouTube clip. And those were the days when, especially with our group, PBI was so professional. We traveled with coats and ties. Actually, Rick, his first wife was Joy Macy, who was a trained professional, still works in the tennis industry. She worked for Peter Burwash. But I wanted to just observe Rick's program. And then when I got there, it was the French Open, and that time of year, school's not quite out, summer exams, summer camps haven't started, and there was zero kids on the court. Since that time, I've been back to Greenleaf many times in different situations, but Rick was alone in the pro shop and he's watching Jennifer Capriati. Now that's, I could have just walked in and say, hey, I'm on a business trip. I'm looking at this club. But it was just really, it was in the public that Jennifer had walked. Jennifer and Stefano, her dad, they were now in a different camp and it was public news. I think that is one of the reasons that he was so motivated to work with people that had the potential of a Venus and a Serena. There is a line where Richard is walking. He just first gets to Macy's Academy, and the setting wasn't quite right. They had the clubhouse was almost identical, but it was on hard court.
Right,
it was right here in our backyard. It was on clay, but. They walk by and they basically go, those are the hamburger players. And it's kind of sad that, we have those players here. And I think that's what the consumer, I think, has figured that out. At some of these big academies, there's a backroom deal where some kids are just paying full fare and somebody else is not.
I think they call them the chum.
Yeah. With Rick back at Greenleaf, he had the signs up. Now, the place he's at in Boca, it's just amazing. Pop the popcorn. Some of the lingo was used, which was fun to hear. But Rick is a great upbeat motivator. But Richard was putting signs up on the courts in Compton. It made me wonder if he had picked that up from Rick just by reading about him. Because they showed Richard late at night working as a security officer, pulled out a bunch of tennis magazines. Connors is on the cover of one. But coming back to observing, when you actually want to watch people teach tennis, you don't want to be in a situation where you chit-chat. I was doing a project for Tennis Memphis, a nonprofit organization, and they have 60 tennis courts, and Stephen Lang's the executive director, and that's been something that he's been trying to do for maybe 25 years. Just get it right, and you got to take your hat off to him. He's just keeps plugging away, trying to make Tennis Memphis happen. So the Groovers were there for 24 months. I was there 21 months. So one of the national coaches from the USTA came in. And I told Steven, I said, you can't come for the first 2 hours. He said, why? I said, because it's going to be a female coach. She'll be really nice. And when you talk to her, she's going to look you right in the eye. And we don't want her to be looking you right in the eye. We want her to watch what we're doing on the court. So at Braden's place, when you were a volunteer, they actually called you an observer. I was very proud of my nickname from Vic, that I was the observer's observer. Just to have eyes in your back of the head and what's going on. If you want to get on YouTube, there's an hour and a half interview with Rick. Jim Martz, a mutual friend of Rick and mine, he owner-operator of Florida Tennis. There's an in-depth interview. There's so many articles and so many videos. I have spent quite a bit of time with this movie. People work for three things: money, recognition, satisfaction. You can always work. You can always work for all three. But I do think the promoters, I mean, it's really, you know, it's maybe not a nice term, but a recognition freak. You know, I've told many people over the years, you would change your last name to sit in the booth courtside with a famous player. People are just so motivated to do that.
Seeing another phase of the recognition seeking on social media for sure.
Yeah. With, I think also too, those self-promoters, and they refer to themselves in third person. I personally have a hard time doing that. Well, Steve Smith, well, use my name in third person. But Rick was he's a Pied Piper. He's positive, cheerleader. He's a pump you up guy. He's charismatic. And not in a negative way, but he's very similar to Nick. You know, they say about Nick Balotelli. I know you've had a chance to meet Carlene Bassett, who was with Nick way, way back. And they're obviously very good friends all these years later. Carlene says, Nick is the best junior coach in the world, but then he's the worst pro coach in the world because the pros paying him. So, you know, he can really be Jim Lehrer. Everybody should have a jolt of Nick Balotelli. I don't know. I have no idea if Macy's capable of giving that jolt, but Nick can do both. But a girl that I've worked with, that's a story. I saw Vicky Duval. I worked with her younger brother, and she knew she didn't serve very well, and she told her mother she wanted to work with me. She has some more issues than just the serve, but she had the it thing. She could win and won early on, go fast here, but I wanted her to talk to one of my players, but I didn't want her to meet the player. They're practicing the same facility. I didn't want to meet her until Friday. This girl by the name of Rachel Rohrbacher. You remember Rachel?
Mm-hmm,
she sure. was there when you were there. So Rachel ended up being a very good player, played at South Carolina. They were top five team when she was there. She had some bad luck with injuries, but she won a bunch of matches for them. So I said to Vicky, I said, have you met Rachel yet? She goes, hasn't everybody? I go, what do you mean? She goes, just wait, listen. So Rachel's 10 courts down and she misses a point. She just goes, Rachel. So, but I'm having lunch with Vicky and Nadine Duval, and they tell me they worked with Rick. And I said, give me 2 seconds. I'll guess your nickname. She's from Haiti. So I just thought about it for just a moment. And I said, you were the Haitian sensation. And they said, how did you know that? How did you know that? Every coach, in all fairness, every coach has to fill their lesson book. But for the most part, Rick has worked with players that are already established. Ken was a player who won a Grand Slam recently. She'd been exceptional that she was very, very young. But then, you know, like how long do these players work with Rick? Ken was on the cover of the USPTA National Magazine. She was 5 years old and her grip was on five. And a backswing was 5 feet behind her back. But I do think that a lesson, there's so many of them, that the parents of these great players believe in them. They're not giving up, and they just persevere. In the movie, Roddick's name is mentioned. Andy spent time. His brother John was at Macy's. There's a famous story where Macy says about Andy Roddick, yeah, we're playing flag football, and he's the youngest guy. And he runs down the field and he tries to tackle the biggest guy. But they both very positive about each other. I guess it was 7 Grand Slam. Connors' name was mentioned. So I read there were 7 Grand Slam people mentioned in the movie, but Connors, his name was mentioned too. So that was I came up with 8. Serena's a year older than Andy, but just to kind of give you a picture of the, because I was working 5 miles away in Boca Raton when the Williams sisters started with Macy. And so Serena's a year older than Andy, but and Andy has expressed how he's tired of hearing it that Serena played him. They played one set, Serena won. But I can remember one time, Jason Hazley, a kid I coached, he was the same age as Roddick, or another kid, I can't think of his first name, it was Brooks. So the three of them show up on a weekend. The academy I was running at the time is called Seguzo Bassett, Carling Bassett, Robbie Seguzo. And I just remember watching, out of curiosity, Andy, because his brother John had beaten, or he had played, he definitely had beaten at least one or two of the juniors I coached. And I was like, who's this kid, Roddick, from Austin? But I was really curious to see how Andy played. But Andy was so competitive. I remember this thinking it would be so difficult to say, let's slow down and just work on, you know, refining some things in your game. And years later, I spent some time at the Roddick Tennis Academy. And Andy, such a great player, but playing Davis Cup match, TV, John McEnroe, you can hear it over the TV. He says, why don't you try to serve volley? He's got one of the best serves in the world. He goes forward. He's unsuccessful. And then he just tells Patrick was the captain, how dumb that was. But you know, as great as these players are, I mean, there's things where you look at it, like say Serena and Venus. Yeah, I think people just, you know, tell us to go sit in Section F and buy some popcorn, that they could have even been better. Scary part.
Right.
With Sharapova, you just have to read her book. I mean, you know, sometimes it's an elevator ride. It's, in other words, it's not that long. But I think Nick Baldessari is the person who's seen the most tennis players, you know, from here, there, and everywhere, that want to be the best tennis player they possibly can be. But Rick is right up there. I think it's amazing here in Florida. I make videos and it can be very incriminating, you know. So if someone's worked with someone for 5 years, then we make a slow motion analysis. But just random Richard, you know, he ended up at Rick's place, and I didn't know that the money that was being spent. I can tell a story about that. But Mary Pierce, another Grand Slam champion who spent time with Rick. And Jim, or her father, people have labeled him the tennis player or the tennis parent from hell. But I like how Rick has stood up for Jim. He goes, hey, there's some positives. You get your daughter to be one of the best players in the world. And there's so much emotion involved. It is a trail of tears having your daughter or your son become a great tennis player. Critical, cynical. Rick has been the USPTA coach of the year a half dozen times. My guess would be a half dozen times. And I'm a member of the USPTA, and I think all coaches coming in, you shouldn't be able to voice your opinion unless you're associated. You don't have a voice unless you're a member. But I do think sometimes it's like, well, if someone, say even a college tennis, their team wins a national championship, they become the national coach of the year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll get into Vic Braden, but Vic will tell you the great coach is the one who can really teach you how to play if the kid's taking their ice cream cone and then putting it in the middle of their forehead. I speak for myself, is have a chip on my shoulder where, are you a developmental coach or you're a recruiter?
Well, you're a low performance coach, right?
Yeah, that's the joke. People introduce themselves and they say, "Hi, I'm Tom. I'm a high performance coach." I say, "I'm a low performance coach." The Hall of Famers. Let's get into Vic. We don't really need to go through much on Vic. Anybody who listens to our podcast, we had a 3-part series on Vic. So Vic, Bud Collins, John McEnroe, Pete Sampras, Jennifer Capriati, of course, Venus and Serena will be in. Connors' name was mentioned. Who's that? Jimmy Connors cracker. When Macy is a white guy, yeah, who's walking on the court in Compton. Let me just go through the story of the tape. Richard Williams makes a videotape, and he hand delivered it to Vic. He hand-delivered to Vic at a function where Vic was working as a commentator. Talked to his wife, Melody, for an hour. I've talked to her a couple times over this movie. And obviously, she's not pleased. Anyone who knew Vic would not be pleased. Jeff Lewis, who you know well, a great guy. He started with us, like you, as a teenager hitting tennis balls. And, you know, he's older than you, right? So mm-hmm. maybe 25 years have gone by. But we'll put that on Facebook. He made an excellent tape. I sent it to Melody. Because the title of his video, it's maybe a five-minute explanation, but you know, he felt like walking out, even though he, like us, said he really thought it was a good movie. So Richard makes a movie. He hand-delivers it to Vic. So you just have to think, here's a guy who's working as a commentator. And at that time, the girls were 7, 8 years old. They mm-hmm. hadn't even played tournaments in mm-hmm. Southern Cal. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, but Richard was drawing some attention. They got more attention. It was covering the movie that she, with Paul and Cohen, saying, you know, you'd won 67 matches in a row. So Venus stopped playing at 10. So Serena, 15 months later, they didn't play any junior tournaments after that. So so Vic was given a copy of VHS. Now, one of the geniuses of Vic Braden is that if you've been in his office, I sent him a tape one time. We're doing a traveling clinic, and Vic, he was for years and years, his enthusiasm, it never wavered at all with John Nienagel and brain typing. So Vic says to me, Steve, you spent a lot of time with my two sons, Mikhail and Connor. He said, send me a tape of the guys hitting balls and ice skating, and I'll brain type them. And they were so young that at that time, they had met him, but they, you know, they weren't doing anything from an athletic standpoint. The scene in the movie is that Richard is in Vic's office. So Melody, we talked about today, communicated with Andy Fitzell. So an assumption was made, but in the video, Richard says, hello, Vic Braden. Instead of being famous by Friday, be good by Friday. Well, our girls got good by Tuesday. Mm. So the movie people called me up and they said, we've been told that you have this film. I go, well, it's not my film. I said, then just go to my Facebook page, greatbasetennis.com or Great Base Tennis. Great based Facebook. That shows you my my social media knowledge. So they call me back and they ask me about negotiation fees and owners' rights. And I said, no, it's Richard's tape. He gave the copy to Vic. Vic gave it to me. Well, Vic didn't look at the tape until after, you know, somebody, it was in his office. So why I mentioned my sending Vic a tape of my kids hitting mm-hmm. balls and skating. So like 2 years goes by and Vic calls me. I go, Steve, your kids, they can really skate. I'm thinking, Vic, you cleaning out your office? So it just
unorganized. Yeah.
But in Vic's office, I mean, anybody who wrote a book, anybody who wrote a paper, anybody who created a teaching aid, they wanted Vic Braden's approval.
Right. Right.
And he was such a nice guy. He didn't say no to Richard Williams. He just said, okay, yeah, I'll try to look at it and just inundated. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like he didn't acknowledge the tape, but and then, you know, really what he was looking for, that was not the business that Vic was in. Vic left right. junior tennis. He's working with adults. Number one reason he really did that is he wanted to raise more money for research. Mm. And in resort tennis years ago, people go on vacation all 52 weeks. Years ago, kids did not train year round. They didn't homeschool.
Yeah.
They only went to summer camp. But, you know, they went, yeah, for sure. I mean, you could say, well, they really even didn't go to a holiday camp. It was just summer camp.
Sure.
But in the movie, you know, Vic was so gracious, but they show Richard looking at Vic Braden's book. And I mean, Tennis for the Future, he's wearing a maroon shirt and they superimpose the actress photo. Mm-hmm. Based on the cover of the book. But when I watched the movie a second time, and I actually have it written here, typed out, I sent it to Melody today, how it came across in the movie, that after the meeting, Richard's at a hamburger joint with his girls, his wife, daughter's wife, and I can't eat. And then he goes to the park and he has a beat up racket, a banged racket. So you have to assume he's just banging that on the court and he's hitting balls over the fence. the movie opens up where tennis balls are expensive, tennis balls are precious, and he goes to a posh club and the coach donates some balls to him.
Right.
And then he's walking out of the club, he's picking up tennis balls. But that scene, he's just hitting balls over the fence.
Getting rid of them, yeah.
And so when I saw that the second time, it's like, whoa.
It was like Vic was the straw that kind of broke the camel's back.
Well, he had a copy of Vic's book, and Vic was, I talked to Melody again, and he said, well, we watched the tape, Tennis Our Way, because Vic made a tape with Arthur Ashe and Stan Smith, but Vic also had this TV show, Tennis for the Future. Mm. And Vic was famous. He was on Hollywood Squares. He's on all the talk. That's a game show. He's on all these talk shows. This is how it goes. Richard, as you notice, Vic, he's in Vic's office, and it was not Vic's office. I mean, they show all these old trophies. Melody said today, if Vic was given a trophy, it'd be in the garage in a box. And the irony of that is that it's a trophy. It's all these trophies laying around, and the image on the top of the trophy is a myth. Mm. You hear all these people, the trophy look. Oh, they don't have the trophy look. You got to pause at the top. And Les Stofan was maybe the best server in the United States in the 30s. I taught tennis with his son. He was a substitute. He'd come up from San Diego, and he would work part-time for Vic. But it was the sculptor said, no, people would turn like a baseball player. They're really good servers. They said, no, I want this arm up, this arm down, elbow down. Some irony in that. But so I'll just read this. Raise your hand, Serena. Venus Williams. So then it was a combination of listening to the tape and then dialogue. We have your tape, Tennis Our Way. We've been viewing it. However, the tape says you'll be good by Friday. Well, guess what, Vic? We'll be good by Tuesday. The girls are looking for some coaching and think you'd be great. So I want you to relax, take it easy, and get a chance to see some real good tennis players. That's it. And then Vic says, so I guess you made the tape on yourself. And then Richard goes, yes, I did. And Vic actually says, that's very industrious. Vic, who was Mr. Cameraman, to pop in a VHS tape and film. Richard talks about how you were there, the camcorder. Richard, oh yeah, I'm a businessman, Vic. And this is the deal you're asking for? All this for free, Richard? Nobody's taking that bet. Tennis is a technical game, probably one of the most. And if you didn't grow up with the game, then it's like playing the violin. It takes hours and hours a day, year after year, expensive expert instruction, just to hold the thing the right way, talking about a tennis racket. Mm-hmm. Vic would never, ever say that, hold the thing the right way. I mean, he could just in a split second tell you what grip you had. And even for families with unlimited financial resources, the chances of achieving that kind of mastery and success you're talking about, I mean, for one kid, let alone two, it's like asking somebody to believe you got the next two Mozarts living in your own house, It's just very, very unlikely. I'm sorry. It's just my two cents. And then Vic says, well, maybe you can prove me wrong. And then what are your comments on that?
Well, it's unfortunate. I think they needed some kind of bad guy, some kind of villain to kind of create that turnaround and to create a Hollywood story. It's just unfortunate that guy was Vic, who was probably going to be the last person to be that way towards Richard.
With Hollywood versus history. They had to make a story and, to vilify Vic Braden. There's so many of us that would not want to see that happen. With one thing that was missing from the movie is I would have just bet dollars to donuts. Macy always talks about when he first saw Venus and Serena, I believe it was Venus, that had to go to the bathroom. And she walks to the bathroom on her hands. Mm-hmm. And she, I really believe in the power of story. Coco Gauff, you want to get on YouTube and you got to search a little bit, because when she was very young, Coco Gauff walking across the tennis courts on their hands. Is obviously people have a background in gymnastics, but I do think that Richard was hungry, just really, really hungry, and looking for anything and everything and every little idea, like throwing a football, throwing old rackets. I remember the first time I saw the movie Little Mo, and her first coach, Folsom, I think it was her name, but he said, this is the best drill. And I would stand for that. One of the best things you could do for your serves, take old rackets and just go out and throw them. Mm-hmm. And just keep working on throwing action and then just get the toss right where it should be.
He had them also hitting swing volleys in the pouring rain. And it's amazing. Think of Steve Nash playing basketball in the rain and how most people just don't do it. And same with tennis too. It rains, you know, you're not going to even consider. Now on a clay court, of course, you shouldn't. But on a hard court, there's nothing wrong with playing in the rain.
Steve Nash loves tennis. Steve Nash grew up in Vancouver, which is not a hot spot for basketball. They say his brother is even more talented than he is. Was he 6'3"? He stands on the NBA floor. He doesn't look too big. But yeah. Canadian coach Miron Mann, we talked to, he was telling me that you hear a little bit more about Stevie Nash's history in Canada because he's Canadian, that played 30 minutes of basketball every day without a ball. And when he would get on the bus and be riding with his NBA team to the airport, close his eyes. He's just always playing basketball. But the Williams family influence, I think, overall of tennis. I think people are talking about the Fernandezes right now. With Layla doing so well. Coco Gauff, of course. Osaka. There's just all sorts of examples. One thing I have in the notes here is I think one thing that really helped, and it's really interesting, is birth order. So Venus Williams, and Serena says that all the time, that she wouldn't be Serena if Venus didn't come before her.
Sure.
Because I believe she's an ESFP. They're both FPs, but feeler, perceiver. But with that, when I first met the girls, I could go through that. So I'm at Seguzo Bassett, now Chris Everts. And I remember meeting Venus. Rick introduces me to Venus, and I felt like I was reaching up and shaking hands with an NBA player. And he goes, I'd introduce you to Serena, but she might bite your finger off. And Venus was all smiles. And at that time, Serena, to be around her, I think you could say that she was smiley and friendly with people in her inner circle, but she was not trusting people in her outer circle. But in watching the film and reading about what, Macy had to say in this YouTube interview, and then also the article in Florida Tennis, I didn't realize that he funded the whole thing. Where he motorhome, $92,000 motorhome. The girls were wearing Reebok, and I was under the impression, even with a magic number, that before they signed a big contract, they had a contract for $350,000 a year, which is a lot of money. And that was funding the family and Rick. Now, just like how accurate were the things with Vic Braden, I don't know how accurate the things were with the finances, but Rick wanted out of the situation he was in Delray Beach. And at that time I thought, well, he's just rented too many courts and too many townhouses and he doesn't have enough players. So it was with Dave Anderson. I was the first person hired after the architect. So I went in as a director of tennis, and then within the first 2 weeks, Dave Anderson joined me. And Anderson was running the place on court for the most part. And I was doing all these things off court because I was just trying to get things organized. To digress, I remember actually so out of my lane, but negotiating with Kennex and Gasaguzo, $25,000 a year. I believe it was, X amount of rackets, like 100 rackets that he could sell for free. And And I thought, this is great. And he goes, there needs to be another zero. And I go, Robbie, you're not playing anymore. You're not playing at Wimbledon. You're teaching over here with these kids in this corner of Boca. But it went on for weeks and weeks. And was Macy going to join us? Was he not going to join us? He wanted to be in. And I think after seeing the movie, it was really more about finances. That were really, really steep. It wasn't a matter of too many courts and too many townhouses. Is that when you're feeding a family of five, and you know, see the movie, Richard made $52,000, and they wanted him to buy a mobile home. They wanted to pay, he had to have the same salary that he had. It was really interesting too, where all that's going on, and he told Rick, he goes, Rick, well, you work for me. It's like, did he really say that? But I do think with Serena coming back in the birth order is that the laughter was needed with, but I can remember because I was working off court, Carleen Bassett, it was giving me a hard time because I was putting some weight on. And it was back when there was no cell phones, but there's these big battery operated phones. If you didn't go too far from your house, you could go for a short walk. And I mean, I had so many conversations with him at midnight. I said, yeah, you can call me anytime. And he called me anytime. But really in the end, where it was finally approved that he was in, but when he was in, it had to become the Rick Macy Tennis Academy. Mm-hmm. So, and then shortly after that, the whole thing went to Chris Everett, IMG. Racism. I've got some thoughts on racism. You want to comment on that at all?
It's a theme in the movie. And when the girls first start playing, or really when Venus first started playing tournaments, you could sense this kind of the racial, you know, connotations of the tournament really being exclusively white young girls, and she was the only black girl playing in the tournament alongside them, and overall, you know, Richard Williams describing how his life was growing up in Louisiana and the treatment himself and his father received, absolutely was a driving force behind what he was doing with Venus and Serena, but also, you know, a driving force behind the theme of the movie. What Venus and Serena have done, you know, to pave the way for so many others. Not that they were the first, you know, African-American tennis players, to ever play, but to be number one in the world and to have the success that they've had from the background that they have in, you know, growing up in Compton with Richard, you know, and just, you know, incredible, obviously. But yeah, that's definitely an overarching theme in the movie.
With made me think of a project I did with the South African Tennis Union. The Federation sent four players I've got down here, Jeff Kutsiert, Lucinda Gibbs, Giselle Swartz, and Jason Stoltenkamp. I saw Jeff on TV yesterday coaching the Colombian doubles team. And I was the coach, chaperone, chauffeur, Craig Tiley, who's from South Africa. At that time, Craig was just a progressing tennis pro who was working really hard, but the connection was with Russell Seymour. And before that, a couple other South African kids, John Lafayaga being one of them, were sent to us in Tyler, Texas. And so this was in the 80s. Jeff was the first black from South Africa to play Wimbledon. But in being the coach, the chaperone, the chauffeur, and driving these kids for, you know, 3 months to tournaments, I was just shocked. Now, thinking about Vic Braden, how Vic would have handled it. He wasn't confrontational at all. But I can remember just like the scene, like the movie, is that people were not happy that I had these four kids with me. Mm. And I remember this, I do think I have a few verbal comebacks from maybe having three older brothers or even two older sisters, but, you know, living in the locker room. And so this guy reprimands me. He goes, what are you doing? Why are these kids here? I looked at the guy and go, well, I guess you don't want your kids to have anything to do with international tennis. I think sometimes you just have to be able to say that one thing. But, you know, reverse racism, I think people are afraid to mention that. Richard was very outspoken. And this would be very mild, but the definition he had for doubles was killing the white turkey at the net. So, and, you know, there were some scenes in the movie where he used it with humor, where he sat down with the two possible promoters and said, I'm happy everybody took their hood off today, meaning the Ku Klux Klan. But as you mentioned, they weren't the only blacks. I mean, the story of Althea Gibson should never, ever be forgotten. And then also, you know, someone who I got to know quite well, the late Angela Buxton, she was Jewish. And they were also discriminated on. You can't play here, you can't play there. And they became a world-class team, winning Grand Slams. Arthur Ashe. But also, too, right before Serena and Venus cracked the big time, Lori McNeil and Zena Garrison. So I think that's something that, you know, they weren't the only. They weren't the only with... but Sloane Stephens, Serena was a little unhappy one time in losing to Sloane, and she said, I made you. And I do think that you have to give Richard, and it is, the movie's called King Richard. It could also be called Queen Orsine. You know, to think about what the mom did. There's a lot that where people could read about the rights of the movie and the rights of the of William or of Richard Williams' story. The title of his book is Black and White, the way I see it. But I do think people should be reminded of what happened to Jewish people, and you just think of death. And not that you or I would know, but I'm sure many people would agree that slavery is worse than death. Down the street, I was working with Karina Morariu. Now, Karina Morariu, I was really working with her dad. Her boyfriend, he has a Slavic name. They were married at one time. I used to just quickly introduce him as Andrew Sonovich. And he would just smile. And, but she won Wimbledon doubles title with Lindsay Davenport. She only played two national tournaments. She's living right down the street. So this thing about, you know, like Richard, it was revolutionary that, oh, you hit an open stance backhand, or it was revolutionary that you don't have to play junior tennis. So I think that's where it was a little bit too much overselling that this, no one had ever done this before.
Right, right.
Albin, a brain surgeon, I remember seeing him at tennis teaching conferences. He was famous for saying, no one remembers who wins a weekend tournament in Miami. And people would laugh at me, but Karina did many things better than either Williams sister when it comes down to refined skills. But the Williams family, they hit the genetic lottery with both those girls. When Venus came on the scene, remember when she first started playing, she was just a gazelle. Like, she was so fun to watch on a fast grass court.
Oh, yeah. But no, I think Richard says that in the movie. You know, he says that's one of the reasons why he chose tennis.
Yeah. Here's something I say. Who wins? The players with inferior athletic ability and superior double skills, or the reverse? And who wins are the players with the superior athletic ability. But that's where at the very, very highest level, and don't get me wrong, I mean, what Vic did see on that tape, and actually I say it correctly to correct myself, Vic didn't see it on the tape initially. He just saw the girls hit a few balls, and he said, the little one hits the ball better than the big one. And Serena has always had better technique. I think another thing is the speed of their serves. I think that's a lesson for all of us in tennis, is too many times the serve is done at the end of practice.
All right.
Work on your serve. Work on your serve. And you and your staff here at the Performance Center could certainly talk about, you know, what to do with your body to work on your serve. But generally, the Williams sisters, their second serves are faster than the men's serves on the ATP Tour. I mean,
say that again. Their second serves.
Their second serves are as faster than the pros' second serves. Mm. So a Williams second serve or an ATP second serve. You know, Glennon, who works for you, he mentioned the McKenzie. He's talking about athletic ability. I thought he meant McKenzie McDonald.
Oh, no.
And McKenzie McDonald's a great tennis player. He doesn't have a weapon as a serve.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be something I would say would be, okay, I'll bet on that right now. That let's look at Serena's numbers, Venus as well on her second serve. And, you know, it doesn't have to just be the ATP. Like, okay, what's going on? And, you know, the best players in college tennis, best the men versus women. But let me ask you this. Did we really get a full picture of Richard in the movie? 2 hours and 41 minutes.
Was it 2 hours and 41 minutes?
Yeah.
It went by. I mean, it went by a lot faster. It's really entertaining. So definitely go see it. Hopefully you see it after you, before you listen to this podcast, I would hope. What was the question again? Full picture of Richard?
Yeah, full picture of Richard, 241 minutes.
I highly doubt 2 hours
it. 2 hours and 41 minutes.
I highly doubt we got a full picture. I do think the title, King Richard, you know, what kind of king was he? There's all types of, you know, all types of comparisons you could make. He wasn't quite as probably crazy as some of the crazy kings of history, but I think he definitely ruled the roost, and he made a lot of a lot of decisions without consulting his wife and of course his kids, and he was the king for sure.
Well, he in a previous marriage, that was one of the scenes where how many children do you have, asked by his second wife. Tiger Woods, his father Earl, late father. I got a second chance to raise a family. And I think anyone who's had a family, you know, pain of regret is like, well, if you could do things over again. So, mm-hmm. you know, people who end up marrying a second time and having another set of kids. One of his estranged daughters says he has between 15 and 19 children. From what I've read, he has 12 children. The dark side, there is a dark side, obviously, with all lives. I think every family has a few dark moments, but I think the movie was uplifting, inspirational to see. I mentioned the Queen Aura scene. I think Richard had different tactics, but he had reasons behind them. Some had a drastic measure. I read this. I don't know if it's true. You can't, you know, that expression, you can't always believe what you read. People say, well, you can't always believe what you hear. I do think we have a tendency in society to believe more what we read than what we hear. Like now, I mean, it's not like you're working for a newspaper. Everybody and their brother can just put something out on the on the internet. But Richard ripped the heads off the dolls so his daughters would not become young mothers. It's like, okay. But I think the mother was much more controlled, level-headed, quiet, but humble. But at the same time, I read where she quoted at one point, she goes that she was a better athlete at a young age than Venus and Serena. Like, wow. Mm. Richard claimed to be an athlete, but the researchers done their homework on Richard. And, he's accused of telling some tall stories. But the story that was told about him, the beauty of that is that these girls have had phenomenal success. Just in singles alone, combined, they won 30 Grand Slams. Mother was a nurse. She worked double shifts. That was shown. Richard worked as a security guard. I mean, sleepless nights. Anybody who I call it the graveyard shift, or you're living a life of jet lag.
Mm-hmm.
You just when they did sign the contract, actually the movie reminded me of Moneyball, where the coach, or they should say the general manager, lifts a piece of paper up and you'd be earning $12 million a year to manage the Red Sox. But they were using or wearing Reebok clothes, wearing Reebok shoes. There was the rumor that Reebok was funding them in some way. You can't sign a kid until they're 18, so you have to deal with the parents.
Mm.
So there's a lot of complications with that. At one time with Puma, Serena had a deal that was 3 times bigger than Venus's first deal.
Wow.
But, you know, not that I would even claim to be in the ballpark on that, but a lot of times those contracts, you know, it's $12 million if you win Wimbledon. It's $12 million, all these things. You know, how much money do you make per round? You know, I've coached a lot of kids that have had a chance just to play like one match on TV. They're playing a Grand Slam, and they might have been top 10 in the NCAAs, and they played less than 10 ATP matches, and someone's giving them a patch, and they're going to pay mm-hmm. them $5,000 just mm-hmm. to wear that patch. Yeah, so they have to progress at majors or with year-end rankings. But again, coming back to being sly like a fox, with one of the coaches who attended the movies with us, he said afterwards, it'll become a Rocky series. Because it ended when Venus was 14. So obviously a movie could be made about Serena and her life, but you know, and there could be, they could continue. I do think they, and I had someone else tell me this, that they had to have the drama there, the drive-by shooting mm-hmm. and such that, or only tennis people would be interested in the story. I mean, it was like, whoa, this is intense.
And when we sat down, we looked around, and obviously the theater business, you know, they're putting movies now just straight to your TV, but the theater was definitely not full or even quarter full. And I looked around and I said, how many of these people do you think are tennis players or tennis fans?
No, we went on first on Friday, on Saturday, same thing, but hindsight's supposed to be 20/20, and it certainly can be with honesty. But hindsight is biased. Hindsight is based on opinion. It could be distorted. It could be dishonest. It could be ego-driven. This is my notes here. This summer, Kimberly Poe was a really good American tennis player. She was ranked as high as number 14 in the world. And her daughter spent a couple weeks, her young daughter spent a couple weeks, Tia, hitting balls with us. And, you know, just one rainy afternoon, said, okay, let's look at this. And you know, your mom's 14 in the world. I mean, that's something to talk about. So I believe it was 95, and it was Serena in 1995. Mm-hmm. I think for our listeners, or our coaches, is to pop tapes in of, say, a Serena in 1995. Mm-hmm. Or same thing with her sister. And just, you know, Venus moving on a grass court when she first came on the scene. I do think, as far as revolutionizing tennis and what they did with second serves, what they did with returns. At first, I was calling their tennis home run derby. They were dictating. Bill Jacobson, remember talking to Bill Jacobson about their tennis, is the match was totally on their racket. They were either making shots or missing shots. Mm. They were going for everything. And I think it was very good how Richard mentioned how he saw junior tennis, how the kids are all stressed out and they're pushing the ball.
Right.
And they even showed the negative self-talk and the body language. I mean, they got a lot in, obviously, and that's what's done in the movie in 2 hours and 41 minutes. Yeah, the open stance, Serena's serve. I think the work ethic. They do get the story out that, you know, certainly they went to the theme parks, they went to Disneyland, Disney World. They sat back and for a lesson, they watched the movie with Humility of Cinderella. But the work ethic, the principal as well, but they work before school, after school. The principal of Richard being upset where they're bragging about the trophies they won, said, no, we're not talking about it. But I do think it's a movie for juniors to see. I've got some notes here from Dave Anderson, who was with me. We had the chance to spend time around the Williams girls. Richard was so curious about studying tennis. I remember just kind of looking over and going, whoa, is that two different times he was in the room where I was making videos. But he said to Dave Anderson, and just his perspective, we have to ask Anderson about this, get him on our podcast. Dave is from North Dakota, so there's not a lot of tennis happening in North Dakota. And the way Richard spoke, as he told David, North Dakota, that's the ghetto of tennis. how did you get here? Meaning that, you know, beautiful Boca Raton.
Yeah.
And then the message was, he told David, he goes, I never want my girls to forget that they came from the ghetto. We have to ask Anderson again, hindsight. My recall on that is he asked Anderson, how'd a white boy from North Dakota learn to talk like that? You know, David might have been talking about kinetic chain or deceleration, acceleration, mm-hmm. milliseconds, whatever. I'll share my favorite Richard Williams story, but let me look up Anderson's notes. You have any closing comments on the movie?
I think outside of all the hard work, you know, the humility, obviously that was all a big theme in the movie, and I think all very accurate. The girls were taught to be multi-talented. And I think if you look at what they've done also outside of tennis, it's an impressive, you know, they're essentially business people. They're involved in fashion. They're all over the media, commercials, acting. But I also think you have to recognize that it was a very sheltered life. Everything was done seemingly with the family. They were at one point in the movie hanging out with some friends at the club and having a hamburger at the country club, having a cookie, sitting next to a girl, having a hamburger. And I think Richard says, you know, nothing's ever free. It's got hooks in it. But obviously I think it was a sheltered life for them. And I think that's, you've seen that, you know, during periods, there was a period in Serena's career where she really essentially stopped playing so she could pursue, you know, other parts of her life.
I think Venus as well. I do think that's one of the reasons for their longevity mm-hmm. is, but also too, is especially Serena, but both of them, it's amazing how well they've done with not playing that many matches. Tell us about your commercial with Serena. You made her famous.
Well, I think it's the one thing I have in common with Will Smith. I've been across the camera from someone else pretending to be Serena. I was in a Gatorade commercial that was featured just on social media and YouTube. And just a happenstance at the Delray Beach Tennis Center, being a coach there for so many years, Serena was in the main spot being filmed in the stadium for, I think, all day Friday. And her hitting partner was supposed to be in the commercial the following day, which was for social media and YouTube. And she pulled him out last minute. She said, no, I need him to come practice with me in Palm Beach Gardens. So they were scrambling for someone to step in as the hitting partner in this commercial. And I did have a speaking role. And basically they hired a stand-in, Alicia Parks, who now I think is, you know, top 400 in the world, but she had this massive backpack of video equipment strapped on and like a little GoPro on her head, wearing a helmet, this huge, it must have been 50 pounds. And we hit on the clay courts over at the Delray Beach Swim Club, used to be Labors. We must have hit for an hour and a half, points down the middle, cross courts, all for about 10 seconds of footage. And I have this one line where I come up to the net and I said, great job, go get a drink. But the whole time, you know, I'm sure most people think it's actually Serena. Like you said afterwards, what was it like? Was she nice to you? And I said, I never met her. But that was my literally 30 seconds of fame.
Actually, Serena spent a week at tennis school that I ran in Tampa because she was in Tampa, the home shop television is based there. Stevie Longley, Brad Thyroff, Austin Krychek, Jameer Jenkins have a connection one way or the other with those guys. And they were all sparring partners with Serena. And I remember she was so nice. I went up and said, this is how I recommend we do this. We've got 60 kids over here playing tennis. At the end of the day, you know, they won't interrupt you, but at the end of the day, we'll just get the photos taken, get it done very quickly. But not so nice sometimes to the sparring partners or the coaches, but I think also there's, there's just so much intensity. It's business, and I think that's not a negative at all. But use my name in third person, Steve Smith. Doug Cash, once you're one of my students, you're always one of my students. I'm very curious when if I taught someone to teach tennis and I watch their students hit a ball, I go, yeah, let me watch them hit a few balls. Not that everybody that I'm teaching hits the ball so well, but Dave Anderson, he did his homework here. Then he told me that this makes up for an assignment that he didn't do in 1987. But this is what he wrote down from the movie. Have a plan, trust the plan, be willing to adapt the plan. The attitude of the household will determine the trajectory of the player. Build adversity quotient by creating adversity, not avoiding it. Don't rush it. Confidence and humility are linked in champions. Work ethic and will overcome technical deficiencies. Fear nobody, respect everybody. But those are his notes. With two more things on my end, my favorite Richard Williams story was told me by the great Ty Tucker. Two girls and their mom, they approach Richard Williams, and his daughters are practicing with each other at a tournament. And we love your daughters. We get our photo with your daughter. And Richard goes, yeah. So they stand and watch practice, and they get their photo taken. But before that, they had some time to talk. And again, the women's going, I just adore your daughters. We're such big fans. And the woman says to Richard, can you give us some advice? And he looks at the woman and he says, you like vacations? And she says, we love vacations. We go on two a year. We bond. It's just great. He goes, my advice is don't go on any more vacations. So, I think that he was, you know, so much smarter than people gave him credit for, and he was figuring things out. You know, overall, I think that their tennis game, even with, say, the training that they had for maybe three full intense years with Macy, a lot of it was just trial and error. But the thing is that we're going to outwork people and we're going to be fighters. But the last thing for me is on with Vic. You know, there's no recall in a movie like this. Back in the 80s, there was a movie on Bear Bryant, and I really enjoyed it. But for some reason, it was called back. You know, it was never shown again in public. Never read, never found out why it was called back. But it's just too bad that Vic is the kind of guy where if you want to shoot the ball out of your armpit, you know, you can learn to play tennis in your basement.
Right.
And no, it's play faster, better, sooner. And it would never be, you need expert instruction. Vic was myth after myth. But the meeting never took place. And Vic wasn't in that business at that time. He did teach, and he was so successful. Everything he touched basically turned to gold at the Kramer Club. You know, I mean, you think of Tracy Austin, the whole Austin family, four out of five kids. The fifth child, he played high-level Division I. They're all great players, but four out of five played pro tennis. But Vic would be the first one to say, well, when I was teaching Tracy, I didn't know how to teach to serve. You know, he's always getting better. But just the setting and that. But I do think that Vic was obviously a big name, and a lot of people were telling Richard no. And it was just too bad that I think Vic was the fall guy, and he was just portrayed to be so out of character. But I do think great movie for tennis.
Great movie for people who are into sports. Great movie for parents of athletes. Just entertaining movie. I feel Will Smith, I mean, he's incredible. Just funny, you know, dramatic.
Yeah, I think, you know, people are saying that he may get an Oscar. The adversity quotient, you know, how much can you take? And not just Richard. And I think, you know, he certainly is with his persona. He's got a lion's share of the recognition, but what both the mother and father did. And I think that's true with every tennis junior, you know, the more support they can have from their parents, the better.
Definitely starts at home.
Yeah. Well, podcast number 67. I hope you got something out of it. Go watch the movie King Richard. Thanks for listening.
Go see it. Thanks for listening, guys.